Blog Talk Radio. Firefly Willows LIVE presents Evolve, featuring your host, Robin White Turtle Lisney.
Welcome, and thank you for joining us on this episode of Evolve, Nurturing the New in Consciousness, the Arts, and Culture, with your host, Robin White Turtle Lisney. Evolve brings you people and ideas on the cutting edge of change, opening the shells of the past to move our culture into the now. The arts and evolving consciousness are how we are bringing that change to the culture at large. Evolve brings you the wise, the foolish, and the heart-based to help us meet the challenges of the times we are in. Your host in helping you evolve is Robin White Turtle Lisney, who received her master's in fine arts from Mills College in creative writing in 2012 and her PhD in energy medicine in 2013. She is an author of 3 books, the most recent being Heart Path, Learning to Love Yourself and Listening to Your Guides. She has published poetry in many literary journals and numerous anthologies, and her poem First Step was selected for reading by survivors at the Virginia Tech Memorial Bench dedication in April 2010. In addition to her writing, Robin is also an artist whose work has been shown widely throughout the Midwest and East Coast. Robin White Turtle Lisney is a psychic medium and energy medicine practitioner through East West Bookstore in Mountain View, California, through her office in Santa Cruz, California, and across the country by phone. Robin travels across the country as a speaker and leading workshops. To find out more about Robin, you can visit her website at www.thecenterforthesoul.com. So take a breath, relax, and let yourself evolve with your host, Robin White Turtle Lisney.
This is Robin White Turtle Lisney, and today we have an interview with Patricia White Buffalo. Patricia is, as you will hear, has a seminar on shamanism, and we're also going to be talking about shamanism and what it is. So now listen to Patricia White Buffalo and an interview I did with her earlier this week.
All right. Today, this is Robin White Turtle Woman, and I am here today with Patricia White Buffalo. Patricia combines her shamanic tradition and her deep connection with the earth with her professional training as a teacher, therapist, energy practitioner, and musician to guide and heal others for personal and planetary transformation. Patricia began with traditional training at San Jose State University in psychology and then trained in hands-on healing and transpersonal psychology with Barbara Brennan School of Healing. She's also a graduate of the Center for the Intentional Living Training in Early Childhood Development and the CORE Energetic Institute, specializing in body psychotherapy. In addition, as a member of Siddha Yoga for 18 years, she shares her devotional practice of divine worshiping, bhakti, with the form of chanting, kirtan, in all of her work. Patricia's 20 years of professional experience have included a private practice, a teacher, an assistant dean for the Barbara Brennan School of Healing, and facilitator of shamanic retreats and workshops, and a teacher for healing programs internationally. Patricia brings her love of music and its power to heal to her production of musical healing events with the Heaven on Earth Ensemble. As a musician playing the Native American drums, rattle, and flute to induce trance-somatic states for healing and transformation, she has also produced a CD titled Journey With Me, featuring shamanic guided journeys. She currently has created a shamanic training and transformational program called Walk the Shaman's Path, a unique and extensive 3-year training program specializing in the utilization of her own perceptive blend of shamanic and hands-on healing techniques with the teachings of the Wheel of Awakening, her complete model for personal transformation. Welcome, Patricia. It's fun to be here in your house, and we're doing this interview with your little dog, Nana, sitting over there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So today we wanted to talk about shamanism, and I'm really interested in the kind of shamanism that you do and how you have developed this. Can you talk a little bit about how you might use shamanism in your trainings and in your practice, and how do you see it? How do you see shamanism?
Well, shamanism came to me naturally. I was never taught shamanism. It was something, as I was started my spiritual path, the first thing that opened up for me was hearing the spirits of the earth, connecting to the earth spirits. It was just the first thing that happened, and it was quite actually alarming, and I didn't understand it. So shamanism has always been sort of something natural, mm-hmm. very natural for me,
mm-hmm.
and so it's been more like how can I then learn how to teach it, or how can I slow it down and figure out and to help teach it by figuring out, okay, what is it I'm actually doing? Or how, you know, what is it? What am I doing, and what's it all about? So it's been through all this time really trying to slow it down and take something that comes quite natural to me,
mm-hmm.
And try to give a form to it,
mm-hmm.
that I could teach it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, when did you first have those experiences? Was it when you were a child, or as you got older, or when did that start occurring for you, where you kind of talked to the earth?
Well, it happened to me when I was like 29, I think it was, and I had sort of a spiritual breakdown. I mean, you know, a death of the way I was living. I grew up in the Silicon Valley, and I was working in electronics and going to college, and I sort of, got and lost in that kind of world, and moved to the Monterey, to the beach, to the coast, and because I felt very lost, didn't know what life was all about, and I knew I could no longer work in the corporate world or in electronics anymore.
So you were in the corporate world.
Yeah.
You were. Oh wow.
I was a buyer for a major electronics firm. Yes, it started out where I was just going to college, and I needed a job,
mm-hmm.
to pay for college. And so living in the, you know, growing up in Sunnyvale and living in the Silicon Valley, at that time, mm-hmm. jobs, you know, were easy to come by if you wanted to work in electronics. So that's how it started.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just to pay for my schooling,
because
mm-hmm. I always knew I wanted to study psychology and actually teach. I was always interested in psychology and sociology. But then what happened was I got involved in working for electronics, and they kept promoting me, and they said to me, if you changed your degree, you know, your major, I will pay for your college, and if you changed it to business. And so I changed it to business, and So I sort of got lost mm-hmm. in what I really wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was 29, I realized that I had completely got off the track, and I was not, I was very, you know, I was very lost.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's when I moved to the Monterey Bay. And when I moved to the Monterey Bay was when I first, I was very depressed and sort of kind of lost, and I would walk the beach. I was living in the van at the time, and I'd spend a lot of time in nature and walking the beach and sitting on the land. And that's when the earth started to speak to me, and the birds and everything started to speak to me. And that's when it happened. And then when I went through that process, I did start to remember as a child. That was something that was very natural to me as a mm-hmm. child. But as an adult, I had forgotten
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
that, you know, that was something that happened to me when I was a child.
Because mm-hmm.
I grew up in the Silicon Valley, which when I was growing, it was called the Valley of the Orchards. So to get to school, you had to walk through the orchards. You had, mm-hmm. you know, you had to walk the land.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was butterflies, there were squirrels, there was all kinds of nature was all over. It was abundant.
Mm-hmm.
And you could actually see that you were in a valley
mm-hmm.
because, you know, you could see the mountains around you. So it was very earthy in nature. And as a child, I would talk to nature.
Mm-hmm.
But I had forgotten. It was mm-hmm. funny. I had mm-hmm. completely forgotten.
Isn't it interesting how a lot of people that do the work that we do have gone through huge transformation, you know, a personal transformation, which gets them into this work, it seems like. I know the same thing happened to me in different ways, but there has to be some kind of a death of the old in order for the new to emerge. So, yeah, I can really relate to that.
Yeah, most people, when you talk to people who do our work, they often will tell you they had some kind of death or some kind of breakdown of the way they were living or the way they believe what life was about.
Right.
Yeah, there's some place where in their life there comes a point of questioning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like what's it all about? Or
right.
Yeah.
What am I doing here?
Why am I doing this?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So that was I was 29 when that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so I moved to Monterey and lived in a van for a year and didn't work and just really got back in connection with the earth and the land. And that's when shamanism reawoken in me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great.
And I used it for personal healing
mm-hmm.
for myself.
Mm-hmm. So once you finish that process of personal healing, I know for myself it never kind of ends, but you're always you get to a point where you could you can take it into another direction. When did you begin to think about going to Barbara Brennan's school, or were you already starting to go at that point, or did you know, or was it later? Did you finish in psychology? Those are a whole lot of questions all at once.
Well, what happened was kind of interesting. Shamanism was the first thing that awoken in me as a spiritual path. And then I did meet Amita, who was a hypnotherapist that I worked with, and with a focus on shamanism. So she worked a lot with me using my natural gift of being able to journey into the shamanic realm. And
mm-hmm.
so I did a lot of healing work with her. But around the same time, I found Barbara Brennan's book, Hands of Light, and I was really taken. I couldn't put the book down. I read it, you know, a few nights. I mean, just read the whole thing. And then I needed to meet this woman. It just happened, of course, no mistake. She was happening to tour in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to do my first workshop with her. And when I met her, we both felt that we had, you know, had met before in another life. You know, we were just had a very nice, beautiful connection with each other. And I knew she'd be my teacher. And even though she wasn't very shamanic, you know,
mm-hmm.
there was something, she really spoke into that part of me that wanted to make sense.
Mm-hmm.
She was a scientist, and the way she looked at metaphysics and the way she taught made sense to my rational, or that part of me that wanted to understand about how all this, you know, how energy worked, how other realities worked, and about the chakra system. And she also, what interests me is, always was interested in psychology. You know, that's what I majored in college. She took psychology and metaphysics and the chakra system and put them together. And mm-hmm. I had never seen that done or mm-hmm. read that. So I was really taken by that.
Mm-hmm.
So I met her, and what happened after meeting her, I knew I wanted to study with her.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did some more personal work. But then what was interesting, little by little, as I went towards studying with her, and then studying core energetics and Center for Intentional Living, it's like, in a way, my shamanism was there, but it sort of didn't, it took a center, second stage. It kind of, mm-hmm. I left it alone. I mean, mm-hmm. I dabbled in it a little bit. I liked to make sacred objects. I did some ceremonies. I brought some of my shamanic work to Barbara Brennan's,
mm-hmm.
but it was like, you know, to me, I needed this other type of work.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I worked for Barbara for 13 years and taught for her. And during that time, my shamanism wasn't, in the forefront.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It sort of took second stage to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that was probably good for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
As I look now, I look at it now.
Yeah, because Barbara Brennan... talk a little bit about how Barbara's school works. Can you give us kind of an idea for those of listeners that might not know who Barbara Brennan is? I know she wrote The Hands of Light, and she wrote a bunch of other books.
Yeah, she wrote just two, Hands of Light and Light Emerging.
And Light Emerging.
Yeah, as I said, Barbara was one of the first to put the chakra system, the aura, and the psychological, developmental system together.
Mm-hmm.
And so her school really taught hands-on healing, but also taught you psychologically what we call the characterology systems of the Reiki systems of looking at people's auras, but also physical bodies to see developmentally where they're in defense or where they're wounded. So
mm-hmm.
Barbara really taught us how to work with the energy field and the mm-hmm. chakras to help heal people from their childhood wounding, and how to understand and see where the child wounding was through looking at the aura and looking at their physical body. And so I learned a lot of healing techniques. I developed my high sense perception ability to see and sense and read the aura. I also learned a lot of transpersonal psychology,
mm-hmm.
how to take people beyond the ego. And also we did a lot of work with the ego and transforming aspects of the ego. We learned a system from the path works that we used. And so I learned so much from Barbara. It was just amazing, and I got an opportunity to teach for her in big, large groups and do process groups with hundreds of people. So I gained a lot of knowledge and a lot of confidence in holding rooms with large groups of people and working the energy of large groups of people with
mm-hmm. her. Mm-hmm. That's exciting. Yeah, I know her work is so so important, such a foundation for energy medicine in mm-hmm. general, and how people work with energy today. They almost always refer to her because she really was the first person to really, there were several, I mean, you could say there's others, but her work was so foundational. It was the first time mm-hmm. I remember seeing Hands of Light and looking like, well, that's what I see, yeah, that's... Oh, and she can name it, and she can do
right.
this with it, and she's showing what these colors mean, or the, mm-hmm. the configurations of things in somebody's energy field mean. So
mm-hmm.
that's really, really great that you had so much time with her.
And she also developed a lot of techniques how to, like, to repair the chakra system, repair the lines of light on your energy field. And, mm-hmm. you know, we did past life work and lots of different techniques that she brought that I learned from her
mm-hmm.
and were very powerful and very transformative. I think someone had told me, I think she has 5,000 graduates.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So, she really did leave a mark in the work.
Yeah. Really, really
wonderful.
So I was
fortunate. I taught for her for 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you left her program, what, about 6 years ago? Is that right?
In 2006.
2006.
Yeah. Yeah, I always knew that when I taught for her, I even told her when she asked me to teach, I always knew that I would eventually go back to my shamanism,
mm-hmm.
that was calling me.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that I needed to, even though I liked her work and it was good work, it was not quite my natural way of working,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
I was much more earth and much more shamanic. Her work is more etheric.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I learned so much discipline from her,
mm-hmm.
so much mental discipline and structure that I didn't lack, and that I lacked. And so I can see now, like I said, that I was like a wild person when I first started, and I think I would have just spun out with my shamanism. Shamanism is a very powerful work, and you really have to have discipline and structure,
mm-hmm.
And I think Barbara gave me that,
mm-hmm.
and working, yeah, being with Barbara and working with her in a more structured format,
mm-hmm.
Working those the higher levels, which wasn't, you know, really my natural place, you know, the higher chakras, the higher levels weren't really well developed in me,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The lower levels were, you know, mm-hmm. the more earth levels were, so that's what I got. I got a lot from her, and then so I felt like then I came back to my shamanism, and it was much more balanced.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I felt like, and much more disciplined. I was mm-hmm. more disciplined, and I could utilize and go deeper with the shamanic work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I also learned, I think, from her so much, but now that when I went to then take my shamanism and said, okay, because I felt really guided, now it's time for you to, you know, awaken and help awaken the shamanic nature and the students who come to you, you know, that are
mm-hmm.
called to work with you. I really was so pleased that I had worked with her for so long, because I learned how then to have a structure of a way to teach people
mm-hmm.
how to put a program together,
mm-hmm.
you know, how to break it up in segments and how to write techniques up and things like that,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
which I would not have had if mm-hmm. I would have just, you know, not have done that work with
her.
Right. So it was really, now in hindsight, I'm like, oh, perfect,
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
how it went full circle for me. Mm-hmm. So when I left Barbara's is when I really came back,
mm-hmm.
To my shamanism, and then it was slowing it down and figuring out, okay, how do I do this?
Mm-hmm.
What is shamanism?
Mm-hmm,
I mean,
mm-hmm.
because it wasn't something I read in a book or anything,
mm-hmm.
so I had to, okay, how do I journey? Okay, you know, what am I doing when I journey? You know?
Right,
break it all down, the process.
Yeah, and you have to do that to teach it, and so
exactly.
that's what was important at that
yeah.
time.
And so it's been the last 6 years as I've been putting together my programs, really slowing it down and actually not learning shamanism, but learning how I do it and learning how to the best way to, as I say, I really think of more that I'm not teaching shamanism as much as I'm awakening the shamanic nature and the students that come to me, because
uh-huh.
for me, everybody's shamanic, has a shamanic nature.
Right.
Because I see shamanism as something that, you know, it, that we, our ancestors, all our ancestors were earth-based spiritual worshipers.
Right.
And that's what I believe shamanism is. It's just earth-based spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been proven that that was practiced on every continent in the world. So if that's true, everyone's ancestors come from an earth-based spirituality.
Right.
And so what I like to think my work's about is, okay, how can I help you awaken your natural ancestral connection to your earth-based spirituality?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I see my job, or what my teachership's about and my program's about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that, because I think that the earth-based spirituality is often misconstrued as, you know, as Wiccan or, you know, like woo-woo. And actually, it's very grounded and practical. And I know from my own experience that earth-based traditions give you a practical way to live here, but they're all on this earth. But they also give you the tools to manifest for your life and to help yourself and to help your family, to help people around you. So it's a very benevolent practice as well. And I think that's highly misunderstood by a lot of people. So we're going to take a little break, and we'll come right back with Patricia White Buffalo, who teaches a shamanic training and transformational program called Walking the Shaman's Path. And we'll be right back. Back with Patricia White Buffalo, who teaches a course called Shamanic Training, Walking the Shaman's Path. It's a shamanic training and transformational program. And it's a three-year training program that specializes in her own perception, perceptive blend of shamanic and hands-on healing techniques with the teachings of the Wheel of Awakening, which is her complete model for personal transformation. So welcome back.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I wanted to kind of switch gears a little and see if we couldn't start with some music. So I know you love music and you use it a lot in a lot of your work. And you used it in the Heaven on Earth Ensemble when you were doing your program with that. So I'm just going to let you play for a minute here.
Okay. Well, I'm going to play, this is a Native American flute. Trying to remember, I think this particular one, I have quite a few, as you're in my house and you're noticing I only have about 8 of them, but this one's from New Mexico, and it's one of my favorite.
Thank you. Beautiful. Thanks, Patricia. I could really feel the core of my being, like, activated or something when you were playing that. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. So when you first stopped teaching for Barbara Brennan, you created this incredible production called the Heaven on Earth Ensemble. You want to talk a little bit about that? Because that was just such an amazing experience to go to. And
well, that's right. You came to one of our productions.
Yeah, I came to a couple of them, actually. And I loved how you put that all together. Did that have, was that kind of a preliminary project before you started teaching your work?
Yeah, after I left Barbara's, I was a little lost, I guess. I didn't quite yet feel ready to start a program or teach my work, or, you know, because as I said, I came out and I sort of didn't know what that was even going to look like. And the only thing I had passion for was my music. Mm-hmm. I loved my music, you know, loved making music. And so when I left Barbara's, I started a group called Heaven on Earth Ensemble, and got together some of my friends and got a, you know, Joy Atler, who is a great singer. I worked with her. She was one of the teachers in my program. And Kate Pernice, who also I worked with, and her husband, who was an incredible musician, was playing piano and keyboard. Then he brought his friend, Michael Tomlinson, and brought him on. He played the drums. And then we brought a couple other people who did shamanic gutch drumming. And we put together this as a 2.5-hour event, and it was really an event to open up the chakras and really connect people to the earth and awaken them to their core, to their magnificence. And also wrote a poem, Awaking to Your Magnificence, during that time. And it was just a time for me where it was just being creative, and I really enjoyed it. Connie Cummings at the time, she had an organization, nonprofit organization. She actually funded me, mm-hmm. and to help me put this together. And we did we must have did like 13 events, 13 concerts.
Wow, you did, yeah. 13 concerts.
Yeah, we went
wow.
to New York 4 times, and we went to Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, of course, a couple of times, to Santa Cruz, New Mexico. I enjoyed it. We had a blast, but it just, I couldn't make it work financially. And I mm-hmm. hope someday that it will come full circle. It'll come full circle,
mm-hmm.
you know, and have the financial backing or be able to really, make it work in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a blast, the group, and we all loved it, and we were sad that we couldn't quite make it work. And we had people loved it, had rave reviews about it, but we just couldn't make it work financially so everyone
right.
could get, you know, paid so that mm-hmm. they could take the time off and make it all work.
Yeah, and you had a slideshow behind
yeah.
the musicians, and you went through all the chakras,
mm-hmm.
and I remember
through music
and built the whole program from the ground chakra all the way up. It
right.
was really great.
In my group, we created our own music to represent each chakra.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was an original music that we created as a group together. And
and you still have that CD out there,
yeah,
don't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh.
We created a CD. Yeah, it was a wonderful time of creation, and
mm-hmm.
and I really enjoyed it. Again, if if it all would have worked in the monetary aspect of it,
mm-hmm.
we'd probably still be doing it.
Yeah. Well, then you started to create you create drums and rattles and things also, right? Did you use those in the Heaven on Earth Ensemble?
Oh, yeah. I've always used my own instruments. I create my own drums and my rattles. But actually, you know, I did that in the very beginning when I started studying with Barbara. That's what put me through school.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
Yeah. I used to make medicine pipes and drums and,
mm-hmm.
and rattles and smudge feathers and
mm-hmm.
yeah, and all mm-hmm. those things. It actually put me through my all my trainings.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I still use some of those instruments when mm-hmm. when I do my work.
Right. And you come from part of your background is Native American, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm Mexican Indian and Apache.
Uh huh.
And then Spanish and German. So
you've got a lot of different
streams
coming to you.
Well, I always feel like I feel like I'm a bridge. I'm half European and I'm half Native American, so I feel like I'm a bridge.
Uh-huh, yeah. So talk a little bit about the training, the shamanism. Let's talk about shamanism because I think it's a highly misunderstood word today. I think, you know, a lot of people have different takes on what it might be and how it's practiced in different traditions. But I think that basically earth-based traditions around the world see shamanism as a way to bridge one world, this world, this physical world that we're in, and a spirit world. Would you talk a little bit about how you approach shamanism and how do you see it developing, or how do you teach it so that people can get their own experience of it? I guess maybe that's a kind of broad question, but I'd like to know how you approach it.
Well, one of the things that I like to do when I'm doing a lecture, you know, especially if you're, you know, having a free, I often do free talks just to get people, you know, just an introduction and even come in and be curious. I'll ask these four questions, and usually this really helps. I'll say, I'll ask the group if they believe that they're a spiritual being inhabiting a physical body.
Mm-hmm.
And surprisingly, even the most skeptic people could I believe that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll say, do you believe that there's other realms of, existences? You know, do you believe there's more than one realm of existence? And most people, well, surprisingly go, I think that might be true.
Mm-hmm.
And then I ask them, do you believe if trained that you could take your spiritual body and travel to these other realms of existence as if you were shown and trained? And there might be a few people that go, I don't know, but at least they seem to be open to that. Well, yeah, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I could, or at least I'd be interested in that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll say, okay, do you believe if you could travel with your energy body to another realm of existence and you could receive any healing or guidance or some type of healing in that other realm, that you could take that healing that you receive and bring it back to this present body, this present existence, and it would change this reality in this present time. And surprising, most people go, yeah, I'm open to that possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that sounds like that might be true.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll say, well, that's what shamanism is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then you really spark their interest. They go, oh, that's, you know, and because that's what I think shamanism is. I mean, that's what my guides tell me or teach me, is that really what shamanism is really tapping into our ancestral connection to the way the earth was when our ancestors first walked,
mm-hmm.
which was earth-based, connected, and was where spirits spoke to the earth, everything spoke to us, and we were one with
mm-hmm.
the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And that existence, you know, like a radio dial that you change, is still there. It's just that we've changed the radio dial and
right.
moved away from that existence.
Right.
But that way of walking or that earth existence, I believe, is still there in another realm of existence
mm-hmm.
at a different frequency.
Mm-hmm.
So what I believe shamanism is about, you know, teaching people how to change their frequency, you know, and be able to move into the frequency that our ancestors walked the earth and then connect to that earth realm.
Mm-hmm.
I call it earth in spirit realm, which I call shamanic realm.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I do. I feel that I teach people how to go into an altered state, and in that altered state, how to travel with their light bodies into this shamanic realm.
Mm-hmm.
And for healing, guidance, protection, and support.
Mm-hmm.
And then I teach them how to work in that realm. And I always tell people, though, that realm will look differently to depending on who you are, your ancestral, you know, connection. It's not just going to be one way. So that's where I really like people to open up to their own tradition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because really earth-centered traditions or spirituality are in every tradition, every walk of religion, even if they are in denial of it.
Like,
you could say, you know, Catholic Church might be in denial of its earth-based reality. But in truth, it really has that earth-based reality. I mean, every Catholic Church has a rock in the altar, and they use candles, and they use light and water and incense and all the things that you use in any kind of shamanic tradition.
Yes.
And when I realized that there were rocks, I remember that they had to have a consecrated rock from a sacred site in the altar of every Catholic church. That completely blew my mind when I found that out. So I thought, wow, see, it's earth presence. It's taking those relics that are considered sacred in that realm and bringing it into the church and consecrating it for a specific purpose that then gives power to that altar. And so that's very primitive. I mean, when you think of it, it's very primeval, and it connects all of us. Every single tradition has some kind of a connection to the earth. It has to.
Yeah, they say if you look at it, at the bones of it, every religion came from some shamanic tradition.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Even though the religion will deny it. Like Hinduism is so shamanic.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, they may deny it, but it's there.
Right.
But when the spoken, you know, when writing came and words came, and they sort of moved away from some of the earth-based identification and went into a more dogmatic way of looking with the written word and somewhat kind of lost the shamanism, I think, in it, even though it's there.
Mm-hmm.
It's there.
Right.
And that's how I like to teach it. I really like people to see shamanism as a realm that is alive and is active and that is really speaking to them in the now and the present.
Mm-hmm.
And the form it takes is really for you.
Right.
Through your ancestral roots, through your mythology, through your, you know, archetypes, you know, always a good example. You had said use some examples. I always like to use this one. Because, again, I love to teach it in this way. I'll tell people, I often will tell my students, okay, this is my experience how the shamanic realm is. This is my experience how to do a soul retrieval or travel to the lower world or this or that. And then I'll say, now, forget what I said. I'm going to start beating the drum, take you into an altered state, and you experience it. And forget how I said you do it. Forget how, you know, just what will your experience be?
Mm-hmm.
So there was this woman from New York City, and we were taking a journey to the lower world and to the core of the earth. And after the journey was over, she came to me. She says, Patricia, she says, I did it wrong. I did it wrong. I said, well, what did you do? She says, what did you do wrong? She says, well, I was trying to go to the lower world, and I just couldn't do it the way you described it. And she says, I just couldn't do it. It was scary to me. And I says, well, what did you do? She says, well, an elevator appeared. And I took the elevator down to the lower world. She lives in New York City.
Yeah, yeah. How else would she do it?
How would she do it?
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, and what happened? And she had this wonderful experience of the lower world, this wonderful journey and this healing and guidance that she received.
Right.
But here she wanted to negate the whole thing.
Right.
Just because it didn't. Yeah, and so
it didn't sound like what you would do in California,
right?
You know, where you don't have too many elevators, except
right.
in the that, city, you know. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, that wouldn't be my way to journey through
right.
an elevator.
Right,
that would feel very uncomfortable for me. I'm from California, right? And so anyway, it's wonderful to I always enjoy hearing people's stories, how they experience the shamanic realm and how they journey, and how their way of using the realm appears to them, or other guides, or what animals appear. It's very, if you teach it like that, it's so wonderful and so playful and so exciting, so free.
Mm-hmm.
It really loses all that dogma, all the rules, and then magic happens.
Right.
Excuse me. Yeah.
I find that to be true also in the heart garden process that I use, where I take people into their hearts, and in their hearts they meet all these different aspects of themselves, their child and their animals and their feminine, masculine, high self, and they can meet past lives outside the garden. They can so I do it a little differently, but it's still like the same process where you're taking people into their reality and not mm-hmm. into an imposed reality. And I think that's really important in earth-based spirituality.
I think that it really is what shamanism in its true form was.
Yeah.
I don't think our ancestors used so many rules.
No, I don't think it was.
Yeah.
No.
I think, mm-hmm. The shamanic realm is alive
mm-hmm.
right here, right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to teach you right here, right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we start getting into too many rules, well, you only, have this power animal, or you only go to this world or this realm, or you only do soul retrieval here or there or this way, you're losing the true magic of shamanism.
Right.
You're really missing what, the freedom, the power that's there.
Yeah.
Because there is no rules.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's infinite.
Right. Right.
It's in a realm that it's infinite in its possibilities
mm-hmm.
and its creation and its magic and its ability to heal and in so many ways mm-hmm. that you couldn't possibly imagine.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime you put too much, dogma there or rules on there, then you're going to lose some of the magic of it.
Right. I agree with you.
Yeah. And that's what religion did.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I really pull way away from that, but it's really interesting, and I'm sure you find this as a teacher, is the balance, because people come to learn something, so you got to give them something.
Yeah, right.
But you can't give them too much, because then they're going to lose their natural abilities or confidence
right.
to journey and explore the realm on their own. But you got to give them something, to get them started. So it's always been for me a real balance
mm-hmm.
to give enough, but mm-hmm. don't give too much,
mm-hmm.
but give enough to get them started
mm-hmm.
and then empower them to let them just go and let go of what I said.
Right.
So that's
right.
always been my balance as a teacher or goal.
Well, I think when you're doing experiential work, where you're giving them an experience of themselves and guiding them into areas in their own reality, it has to be that way, because if you get too rule-bound, then it becomes a psychoanalysis instead of a shamanic journey. It becomes, you can go in 1,000 directions. I could talk about the heart garden from a psychological perspective for hours, but it doesn't do them any good unless they actually have an experience of it. And when they have the experience of it, that's where things start to shift and move, and people actually can make transformations in their lives. They can't make them if they don't have an experience. I think our whole academic system has kind of gotten off the beam with that, too, because it's always talking about something. It's not actually experiencing it, unless you're like in archaeology or something where you have to go do a dig. But so much, or music, or the arts, where you're actually making things and you're creating things, I think that what we're needing are more experiential ways of teaching, so that people have their own experience. And I really feel like this is the future here. So when you take people on a journey, you're usually drumming. Is that how you do it?
Yeah, or drumming or rattling and chanting, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I just want to get back to what you said. I felt that so true with, because to me, when you're really doing healing work, when you really want to heal somebody or, you know, bring them an experience, especially if you're working with that early child developmental work where you really want to bring somebody an experience they didn't receive.
Right.
Okay. Then you have to take them into an altered state, and you have to have something new happen.
Right.
Okay. And nothing new is going to happen if you in their mind and they're not into an altered state and allowing to be able to download something, experience something new.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's so powerful about shamanism, that it really takes being in an altered state of consciousness, because it's been proven that as children, we were in altered state.
Mm-hmm.
We were in altered states, and most of our wounding happened in altered states, okay? And you can't reprogram the subconscious, which is, you know, pretty much ruling most of our time
mm-hmm.
in our life.
Right.
You can't heal or you can't change your subconscious without going into an altered state.
Mm-hmm.
So altered states, you need to go into an altered state, and shamanism is so right for that. Exactly. It takes you into an altered state, and then it gives you an experience in that altered state,
mm-hmm.
and in that altered state, you're able to influence the subconscious mind.
Right.
Yeah. Something new then now is implanted.
Right.
In the cells, in the mind. There was a study, it was written in the Time magazine, that states that the mind knows no difference between an experience that it experiences in this present reality nor in an altered reality. Mm-hmm. It will register it as experiencing it,
mm-hmm.
the same.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that there just right proves that. So if I can take you into an altered state, if I can take you into a shamanic state, take you on a journey, and give you an experience that you never had, but you really need it. Developmentally, you really need to feel the love of the father
mm-hmm.
or the love of the mother. And I call in the grandmothers, or I call in the spiritual grandfathers.
Mm-hmm.
And I have them gather around you and hold you and praise you. And you could really take that in. And then that is going to be part of your cellular history. It's
mm-hmm.
going to be part of you.
Right.
It
becomes part of your, like, cellular memory.
Exactly.
That you have that memory. You actually receive something you might not have gotten.
Yes.
In your childhood.
And
yeah.
Shamanism is a wonderful way of, and that's what we do in my program,
mm-hmm.
Of healing in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wonderful way of healing.
Yeah. We're going to come right back with Patricia White Buffalo and talk a little bit more about shamanism and her program that's called Walking the Shaman's Path, and we'll be right back. great. We're back with Patricia White Buffalo, and she just played a double flute. Can you talk about that flute a little bit? That's really amazing.
I think I can't remember. I think I got this one in New Mexico, too, but it's a double flute. It's kind of fun. I feel like the flutes, they have their own, you know, personality.
Yeah.
So, like, this flute is like, it's a playful flute. It likes to go, pop, you know, kind of dance, a dancing flute.
Uh-huh.
The other flute I play is a little more serious and, you know, and heartful. But this one likes just like reminds me of a little piper, you know, dancing.
Like a pan pipe.
Almost. Yeah,
And it has a drone, right?
It's
one that doesn't have any holes on it, and the other one has a bunch of holes.
Yeah. It likes to play.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, so the flutes that you have and the drums that you play in your program, you give people an opportunity to take journeys, and they go in and tell me about a little bit more about your program, because you do have you take people through a 3-year program. What do you do in all that time?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a long program.
Well, we meet 3 times a year, and then we have teleconferences, 8 teleconferences in between. Really, the whole program structured around a model I created called the Wheel of Awakening. And the Wheel of Awakening is really 20-something years of my work. And it started out with really the medicine wheel, which is a Native American way of looking at life and how we walk the wheel of life. The medicine wheel has the traditional 4 directions and the 4 elements and the 4 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first started teaching shamanism, I would work with the medicine wheel and do a lot of work with the medicine wheel. Excuse me. Then what happened is, as I studied other works in transpersonal psychology, Eastern philosophy, early child development, little by little, it's like all the work came together, you
mm-hmm.
know?
Mm-hmm.
Because what I found was that for the Western person, the Eastern philosophy way of awakening didn't quite fit because of our development is much different. And while I was teaching, I saw that there was holes, and it felt like there was all this separate way of teaching, you know, like there was this transpersonal work, but it didn't address the personal. It didn't address the young development. And I could see that if there was missing pieces of the young development, then a person couldn't necessarily let go of their egoic world when there was no foundation to really hold them. They couldn't go into those higher levels of consciousness.
Mm-hmm. So if there were holes in their childhood.
Mm-hmm. Childhood development.
Yeah, in their child development, then they couldn't really have a foundation that was going to support them
right.
in the future. Yeah.
Right, to go into even a deeper realization,
mm-hmm.
which takes you beyond that ego, beyond that childhood. And so, you know, as the years were, doing my own personal work, I found that in myself and in my students. I kept studying, and I studied early child development, and then I went to India, and I sat with the gurus, and I also realized that I just working on the ego, transforming aspects of the ego, just egoic work and transformational work, wasn't always addressing or looking at the truth of who we are. It's like we're spending too much time, you know, transforming or processing who we're not, in a sense.
Right.
Yeah.
And the wounds.
Yeah.
Kind of picking over the wounds without really looking at, wait a minute, there's a perfect being under there. There's
mm-hmm.
somebody that's really
mm-hmm.
basically love.
Right.
And basically a healed soul if we can get them to the core of who they are.
Yes. Yeah, so it felt like... I called it, there was, you know, either you were a process junkie, you know,
uh-huh.
just keep processing junkie, or you were, you know, this lost person that couldn't even, you know, really do the basic pieces because there were so many lost developmental pieces, or you were, I called the bliss ninny, who was just, you know, looking for the next guru or, you know, that came and you were really not able to, you know, really take the work and ground it. You were just
right.
getting high, you know, off the next, you know, guru or, you know, that
the
you
next
sat
guru joke.
Yeah, whatever. And so
yeah,
through, again, through my own personal work and finding that holes in me and seeing it in my students, I started putting together and realizing that for me it looked like there was three processes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I called pre-personal, personal, and transpersonal, or pre-egoic, egoic, or trans-egoic, that there was three processes, and that all three of those processes had to be balanced. You had to work on all three of them really to accomplish a true awakening state of your true nature, and that, you know, and that they couldn't be skipped. Not necessarily did it have to be you could use, you know, like doing the transpersonal work at the same time doing Jung work, but
mm-hmm.
you know, but you had to address all three of them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what the Wheel of Awakening is
mm-hmm.
about.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've done is I put all those three processes in the wheel, and then I've taken them and broken them down in the three-year program so that we cover all three processes.
Mm.
And I create a medicine wheel in the program, and we actually do all the healing work. We do all the journey inside the medicine wheel, and we walk the wheel, and we use the wheel to call in the developments and the energies from the shamanic realm to help us get all these three processes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
mm-hmm. now. So that in traditional medicine wheel, there are four quadrants.
Mm-hmm.
But do you take like a third of the wheel per time, or do you take?
There's four.
There's
okay.
four. Uh-huh.
But there's a what I've just done is there's four. But what we've done is we either in the center of the wheel, we call that the inner dwelling process, which is the transpersonal.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so that's the inner dwelling work, and we use the method of more from Siddhi Yoga, because that's my guru that I've worked with, Guru Mai, which is what we call inner dwelling presence. So we use a inward dwelling
mm-hmm.
instead of, some people may more sometimes think of an outward.
Mm-hmm.
So we inner dwell to realize that true nature. So that's in the center of the wheel, and then what I've done is taken the developmental, and this was very hard for me to do, because traditionally in the medicine wheel, you move clockwise, not counterclockwise.
Right.
So what I got guided to do is then I have a small wheel inside the medicine wheel, which is the foundational part,
uh-huh.
and we walk counterclockwise.
Because
we develop aspects of us.
Uh-huh.
And we start from the east and go to the north, and go to the west and go to the south.
Ah.
So each class, we do the east work, we do the north, and we do the west, and then we do the south.
Ah.
And then I have the outer wheel, which is more like the traditional medicine wheel,
mm-hmm.
and then we walk clockwise around.
So
it's interesting. Yeah, the three processes are inside the wheel, and the four quadrants are there.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And so, it was difficult for me to break tradition.
yeah, but it's good, though, to do that, because you're bringing something new in here, which
yeah.
is marrying, really, Western psychology with Eastern, with the shamanic traditions of the Native Americans. So
mm-hmm.
this is really,
and it really speaks
a new
to,
work.
Yeah, and it really speaks who I am. I'm not a
yeah.
traditional, yeah. You know, I am European, too. I
right.
am Western, too.
Right.
And I just want to share one thing is
yeah.
that when I was putting this wheel together, I really got stuck on how to get this foundational piece to work and fit in the wheel. The inner dwelling was pretty easy, and the outer wheel that was, you know, it had already, you know, formed through the medicine wheel. And so, but the inner wheel of the foundational work just didn't work.
Yeah.
And if you walk clockwise, okay?
Yeah.
And so I finally put a big a poster of it by my bed on the top of the wall, you know, posted it on the wall. And I went to bed, and I had a dream.
Ah.
In the dream, they told me, counterclockwise!
Got to go backwards.
Yeah.
Well, in every traditional medicine wheel that I've studied, you know, in when they talk about your personal development, there are periods about every 2 to 3 years where people are going backwards. Like, you know, you think of the terrible twos. Well, the
mm-hmm.
terrible twos start when the child is till their third year. So in their second year, or third year, really, that's when they start going backwards. And the same when they turn between 6 and 7, that's a big transformational time, like in the Steiner work. And then 7 years later, you know, like, so that there's three to four year periods, there's a time when the child needs to go backwards or like reassess who they are, and they're transforming into their from childhood to preteen, from preteen to teenager, from teenager to young adult, and from young adult to adulthood. So it makes sense that those kind of circumventing years are almost like they're going backwards a little before they go forward. Mm-hmm. So it makes total sense what you're saying to me. And then I think in every shamanic tradition that I know of, the backwards becomes a very important instructional, like lightning can be considered, you know, a flash of insight. It can destroy and it can also, you know, transform. But there's always, the backward is always in the teachings of the Native American tribes that I've studied and in. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always got to be a Heyoka in there. There's always got to be somebody, you know, that's going to come in and bring in the energy that's opposite of what's going on in the ceremony. And it's part of the ceremony. It's a very important part of the ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a healing part. Like the third day in Sundance is always the healing day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's when the Heyokas come out. And,
right.
And it's, they're funny, and they also deal with death, and they also deal with transformation. So, well, that's fascinating. I'm really happy to talk to you today about shamanism and how you use it in your program and how you've developed this. It's, is there anything else you want to share with me today?
I just that how it, you know, in the program, it's always been a balance for me to teach in the way I'm trying to hold that. In other words, I've got this model.
Yeah.
I've got a workbook. You know, I've got a agenda.
Uh-huh.
And then it's always so, and then to let it go too.
Right.
Yeah. You know, you say, what do I do? You know, and so it always is a little bit different, because if I'm going to hold to the premise that I keep saying it's alive all the time.
Right.
Yeah. But then the last thing I just want to say, too, is I always try to, the program's gotten a lot of great reviews, and people are just so excited. I mean, they're making such huge shifts, you know, that they weren't able to make, and I think that has a lot to do with the foundational work and
mm-hmm.
just combining all three, you mm-hmm. know, instead of just going in there and trying to and dismantle the ego aspects,
mm-hmm.
and, you know. Can get a lot of defensive, you know, it can be very threatening. So
right. The
way the model has worked, it really takes away the threateningness to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it really builds a foundation that will naturally let things unfold and melt. And the soul retrieval too, you know, working with soul retrieval, gathering aspects of the self also helps, you know, that's such a powerful technique. As you know, you do a lot of soul retrieval,
right?
You know, work. And But the last thing I just want to say is, though, I always remember to do this, you know, when we do a journey at the program, and when we start the program, and when we end the program, to always remember that, you know, my teachings, you know, that were channeled with me, that I've put together, and over all these years, that, you know, and through my own experiences and what I've learned, you know, the wheel and the teachings in itself would not be that, is not what the real power, the gift here is. It's the shamanic realm. I
mm-hmm.
always thank the realm.
Mm-hmm.
It's the realm. It's mm-hmm. the realm is so incredible, and they're so loving. The beings in the shamanic realm are so present, and they're so powerful, and they're so in service of humanity,
mm-hmm.
and they so much want to help us to transform and heal.
Yeah.
And so I always, so it's like, I always make sure my ego knows better not to, you know, take credit for mm-hmm. really where credit is due, is to the realm.
Yes.
I always give
to the spirits that guided you into it.
Yeah. So I always say with great gratitude and thanks to the shamanic realm and all that has created the realm and holds the realm. You know, I always say that prayer
mm-hmm.
because it's like, without that realm, without them there coming into the room and into the wheel we create and being part of the program, and it wouldn't be as magical, it wouldn't be as powerful.
Right.
It doesn't matter what, you know, if I just had the teachings alone.
Right.
It's the power of the realm.
Yes, I hear you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for spending this hour plus with us tonight, and enjoyed talking to you about shamanism. This is Robin White Turtle Lisney, and I'm here talking with Patricia White Buffalo. Would you do a little flute to take us out? Patricia.
Thanks for joining us for Evolve in this episode with Patricia White Buffalo. And I'm Robin White Turtle Lisney. And you can check out my work at www.thecenterforthesoul.com. I've got some exciting programs coming up, and take a look at it. The www.thecenterforthesoul.com. And thank you for listening.
Thank you for joining us. This program was brought to you by Firefly Willows LIVE. We hope you enjoyed the show. This is Deb Caracella. Please join us next time on Firefly Willows LIVE for Convergence with John Caracella, Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. Evolve was brought to you by Firefly Willows LIVE.